is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up at 4:30, John Morosi, the ray of sunshine we desperately need, will join us here in the booth. We are live at T-Mobile Park. We are sitting in the broadcast booth where normally Rick Riz and Dave Sims and everybody sits in here doing radio. So we are occupying that spot until the pregame show comes up at 6 o'clock. And John Morosi, our weekly guest throughout baseball and hockey, will sit in the booth and make us feel better about everything, Dave.
You think he went to morning skate this morning?
I think if it were... If I don't know what time it was going on or if it happened, but if he is in town and it's happening, I think he was there.
Oh, he's going. He wants to try to go on Thursday. We'll have to ask him about
that.
That's what he texted me.
Was it happening today?
No, I think Thursday. So he's trying to figure out if he should stay and,
see a morning schedule.
We'll get the schedule from him.
Yeah.
He was truly excited about the opportunity.
We got to pin him down on that. What do you glean from morning skate? What information do you get? What's
probably like us watching the Seahawks practice, maybe, or something?
Well, you get the line combinations. Mm-hmm. And you see the first goalie out there.
Okay.
I don't know. Hockey people can talk more about it.
You're a hockey people.
Well, he'll go 20 minutes on if you ask him.
You're our hockey people, Mike.
Hockey-ish, you're right.
Hockey-ish
people. Yeah.
By the way, have we seen him down there in the scrum? There's a ton of reporters down in the Mariners dugout, and they're all waiting for Scott Servais to come out and speak with the media.
You see
Morosi? Out there somewhere.
See, there's Brad Adam.
Holding court, animated, hands waving everywhere.
Divish.
Yeah.
Adam Jude.
Divish on his own, not talking to anybody.
Grammer.
He's got the don't bother me face on.
Gary Hill's eyeballing me right now. He's looking at me going, you're sitting in my seat, son.
He's going, don't break my chair, Wyman.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying. So, everybody down there waiting to talk to Scott Servais. So, meanwhile, Jeff passing on with Brock and Salk talking about the Mariners, obviously, and he says... here that the Mariners need to start making big moves because the Rangers are a team that is not going away.
Mariners fans should understand what's coming because, to me, when you hear all of these things, what that says is that ownership needs to recognize this and go out and make bold moves. No. And I'm not saying Shohei Ohtani is the move that's going to counter all of these things. I'm just saying you better be in it because... It's not like the Rangers are going to be going away. It's not like this is a flash in the pan right now. No, they're real.
He's 1,000% right, but that was true before this season. That was true in this past off season.
Yeah,
they had already spent the money on Seager and Simeon, and they bring in Eovaldi, and they bring in Haney, and they bring in DeGrom, and they bring in Chap. They've spent a lot of money, whether it's at the trade deadline or in the past two off seasons. So. What he's saying is 1,000% accurate, but it was true even before now. It feels like a realization like, whoa, the Rangers are they're gearing up and they're spending money and the Mariners better get in it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so they going into the 22 season, they had spent money
going in.
And I just remember that was the conversation last year that, and it took a while, I mean, they've developed players too, but, you look – I feel like they're the perfect sort of mixture of developing players and
adding to
with free agents, and it didn't work right away. And we're like, oh, okay, well, I guess that means that spending money isn't necessarily the way to go. But it just took a year to get going, and now I mean, Texas looks really good to me. I mean, they scare me more than any other team. I'm maybe the Orioles as far as just the American League goes. You know who doesn't scare me is the Minnesota Twins, and it's too bad we're not in that division. We'd be having a totally different conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Totally different conversation.
Yeah, it's a terrible division.
Yeah. I mean, 83 and 73 the Twins are, and then the Guardians are 74 and 83. They're 9.5 back, the next closest team.
Yeah.
So, and you see why they're putting so much focus on this, the end of the season here for the Mariners. Same thing, with Houston and Texas. It's just so... So tight, man. It's such a shame. But, it took Texas a while to get going, but that was the team going into last year. I remember thinking, ooh, we got to watch out for these guys. It's not just the Astros. And they have come around, and they look really good. I don't want to make a wild prediction, but, that's a team that could win out. They could win the rest of their games.
Oh, Oh, yeah. Yeah, they certainly could. I would still go with the Braves or Dodgers in those World Series. They both of those teams feel like the best team in baseball.
They sure could be. Showed that to
the Mariners.
Yeah,
they did. The Dodgers did. Yeah, it was not fun. Passon went on to talk about the Rangers going into this year, thinking this is the start of their window.
I think the Rangers have approached this year like this is the beginning of a really good window that we have right now. Because if Evan Carter's batting like ninth in this lineup, Evan Carter is going to be like a number 2-3 hitter for a long time. That's the only reason he's not going to be the two hitter is because you have Marcus Semien leading off and Corey Seager batting second. And Josh Young and Garcia and Nate Lowe and Jonah Heim, all top of the order guys. And by the way, Wyatt Langford, who is the number 4 pick in the draft this year, is going to be up next year.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that just made it sound a lot worse. I mean, everybody he lists. That's the thing. You look at their lineup, and everybody does damage.
Yeah, and then, I mean, he just got he's just been up for, what, 17 games? Evan Carter is their top prospect in their system. And, you know, you look at the last five, 3-for-4, 1-for-2, 1-for-3, 1-for-4. I mean, the guy he's batting .326. I know it's only 56 plate appearances, but still. 17 strikeouts. He's got 3 stolen bases, 10 RBIs, and 4 home runs in 17 games. And this is their top prospect. It's a great combination of developing guys in their system, and then, you know, that just the perfect mixture as far as going out and spending money in the free agency market.
Yeah, the Mariners are going to have to follow suit if they want to be in this conversation.
Well, I think a lot of teams around the league are looking at the Mariners, going, "Wow, I mean." Their pitching is fantastic, the way they have developed, you know, George Kirby, Logan Gilbert, Wu, Miller, you know, on and on and on. And, you know, so from that standpoint, and they do have a pretty crappy bullpen, but, you know, as far as their offensive players and all-stars, remember they had the entire...
You're talking about the Rangers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the entire infield at the All-Star game were Texas Rangers.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they've had the opposite problems. Their pitching has been their problem. The Mariners' offense has been their problem now for the third consecutive season. So you're going to have to take a different approach to it. I'm sorry. You can't go with what you did this past offseason and go, well, we're going to take a flyer on these guys who at one time had glory in this league and had been good, but they're past their prime, but we might still be able to wring the sponge dry on Pollock and La Stella and Wong. And no, you couldn't. It didn't work, and you can't afford to do that again. But we'll get to that when it's time for that, Dave. They still have an opportunity. It's still in their hands.
So no booing, okay? Well, come on. Shouldn't even be a question.
I say they can do what they want. If that's, I wouldn't do it. I'm not telling them to do it, but if that's what you feel like you got to do, help yourself. All right, coming up, one position group has been the X factor for the Seahawks team early in the season. We'll break that down next with Wyman and Bob. You're listening to Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports.
We are live at T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710. John Morosi will be joining us here in person coming up in the next segment. Look forward to that conversation just to make us feel better about everything, Dave. I can't wait to feel better.
I guarantee you he will make you feel better if you listen, so tune in.
It's impossible not to feel better after you talk to him.
It is.
Meanwhile, we were talking Seahawks earlier, and something you identified as kind of an X factor for this team is how they're using the tight ends, at least early. All of this stuff is it's interesting to me, you know, trends and numbers and everything. It's three games in. Like, I was looking at the quarterback rankings when we were talking to Schlereth earlier, you know, and Wilson is dead last, Zach Wilson. Mm-hmm. Russell Wilson's number 7 in the league. Quarterback rating.
Rating.
His rating, his yards. He's ranked above Geno. He's ranked above Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
Which is, again, we're three games in, but it's just interesting looking at numbers right now. They can be a little deceiving, I guess, is my
point.
Yeah,
absolutely can. You're right. But, yeah, the thing I thought was interesting there is that it looked like Sean Payton was irritated with how the timeouts were being used. But, of course, they have bigger problems.
I was just going to say, Denver. Those are the least of his problems, yeah. The timeout usage.
I mean, that's actually good for Russ, probably. It's taken pressure off of him. And, you know, I mean, he's making $50 million a year, so there's lots of scrutiny on the quarterback. But Oh my God, you got to be looking at. Do we, like Mark said? I mean, that's typically when somebody gets fired, you know. And I'm not just talking about the players; it's like coaches too. So,
yeah, 70. Yeah.
And also, Sean Payton seems to be a little on the irrational side. Like he just blurts things out. Apparently.
Yeah, don't you feel like we're getting a different view of him as compared to what we? Image I had of him in New Orleans, and you know, he was on a commentator there for a bit and all that. But
yeah, I mean, and really, I mean, you think of him and Drew Brees as just having this solid relationship, and there was never, gosh, I mean, I've never heard him snap at the media or anything. But
yeah, well, now we're hearing all kinds of things. But
yeah, anyway, the tight end thing kind of stood out to me. First of all, we've got a clip here from Pete, but you know, you're looking at how Bob, they're multiple. Okay, they're multiple.
Do you like that more than stacking?
The word.
You guys keep stacking wins, keep stacking practice, stacking games, Dave.
Yeah, I'm all right with multiple, I guess, over stacking. But yeah, I mean, you know, just looking at it from the standpoint of you get Kenneth Walker and Zach Charbonnet. Now, they're young guys. Not so much Ken Walker because he's in his second year. And you know, he ran for over 100 yards, five, six times last year? Yeah. Zach Charbonnet is all about potential. So you got those two good running backs. And then you got arguably maybe one of the best duos at wide receiver and DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. And by the way, Tyler Lockett the other day, I was like, I think I was about to say, you know, Tyler needs to make a play. And on one of the touchdowns, I think the touchdown, did Charbonnet have? It was Walker. He had a block where he wiped out two defensive backs. Little Tyler Lockett. Yeah, just
he's
awesome.
He's the everything guy.
Yeah, but you've got those two guys. Not to mention, we're not even talking about JSN. But then, you know, when you look at the tight ends and what Colby Parkinson, I guess I've never thought about him as maybe possibly being like a superstar, but maybe because Pete talked about him the other day in the press conference and was talking a little bit about his blocking as well.
Yeah, he has really, really changed his body and his approach to the game and kind of what he offers us. You know, he was not a blocker. He was more of a slot guy, you know, and a big target for him. The fact when he was banged up and he was in the weight room a ton, he just bought in, and it's changed him. He's 260-something pounds. He's strong. He's aggressive. He's confident in the things that he can do, and he's got terrific feet and when he's blocking. So he's become a really all-around football player at the spot. He looked really good a couple times in catching the ball and running and also blocking.
He reminds me of Stone Forsythe in that I think he was kind of viewed as a – obviously, he's a really tall guy. He's a big guy, but kind of viewed as a project.
Yeah.
And you're starting to see it pay off. You're starting to see it become refined, his game refined. And all right, what is it we can ask him to do that he does really well? Obviously, with his size, you get that blocking element down. That's huge.
Yeah.
That is such a big help. I mean, not just for the passing game, what have you. I mean, just to help out the alignment, especially in the situation now where you've got, in this game, you had three guys and then four guys at one point that were all depth guy, all replacements, and four guys that weren't starters on that line. So having a good blocking tight end, I think Will Disley's a very good blocker as well.
Yes.
That is huge.
Yeah, and I'm not, you know, Noah Fan. I think he's willing. He's just not, I don't think he's as good of a blocker as Colby and Will Disley. But you're talking about also with the connection with those guys. First of all, for Colby Parkinson, he's got, what is it? He's got, where is it? It's yards after catch. First of all, he's got 87 yards, but his yards per game is 29, and he's had a 21-yarder, so he's had a big play. But you've got three guys that you've targeted 23 times, and you got 19 catches out of it. So, I mean, it makes it easier for Geno, and it just makes it, you know, like, how are you going to attack us? You go into a game, and they're pretty balanced. Is it going to be the running backs? Is it going to be the tight ends? Is it going to be the receivers? And as soon as you start, you know, some of those matchups, like for Colby Parkinson, I mean, if you have a safety, if you're playing cover one, it's man-to-man underneath. The safety has to choose, who do I double?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if it's not Colby Parkinson and you get him, or Will Disley, for that matter, on a linebacker, that's a good thing, man. It's a good matchup.
All right, coming up, he's here to try and brighten our day and all of yours as well. He's here for everybody. John Morosi is going to join us here in the booth. That's coming up as we are live at T-Mobile Park. It's Wyman and Bob on your home for the Mariners playoff run, Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
I've never heard a person walk out of the stadium and say, wow, I wish that game would have included more waiting.
He is an endless source of baseball and hockey knowledge.
Jose Berrios, el lanzador de Puerto Rico en el Clásico Mundial de Béisbol.
John Morosi, every week with Wyman and Bob.
You're being serious with me right now?
Tell you what, that guy can roll his R's. Boy, that's impressive.
Yes, he can. And I'm happy to be the subject of two of the things that he said on that little montage.
Well, he being John Morosi, who's in the booth with us here, he's already made us feel better. Look, the sun's coming out.
Amen.
As he came up here.
Just as JP sits down.
It's just a strange power that you have, and we've been telling people all afternoon you were going to join us in the booth.
No pressure.
And make us and the rest of the Mariner Nation feel better. Because right now, on the heels of last night, a very listless, non-representative effort out there. It's four in a row, and you got six left. It didn't feel good.
First of all, it's great to be here. Second of all, if you're on your way to the game, please keep coming. Please, contrary to what maybe some pessimists believe, the game is still happening tonight. The Mariners still have a chance. There are reasons for optimism. You got Kirby on the mound. I think he's due for a big start. There's still a lot of baseball left. Yes, today is basically a must game. No question about it. But you look at this team, they've been able to rise to the occasion in the past. I bring glad tidings of joy. This is going to work out. And I think last night was a combination of, yeah, maybe they didn't really adjust offensively as much, but that was just a command performance from Verlander. He was able to mix his off-speed stuff down, and then the fastballs up that were 94 looked like they were 97, as my colleague Dan Plesak was saying last night. So I just think that was a loss against a Hall of Fame pitcher, and now tonight is a game you've got to win. Honestly, I think the pitching matchup advantages Seattle tonight. I like Kirby over Javier in that sense, and we'll see. I think it's going to be a great, great matchup this evening.
It's too bad they're not in the AL Central. Been kind of lamenting about that. But I mean, Shannon actually pointed this out, Shannon Dreyer, you know, just that it's just gotten so much more competitive. And really, I mean, I feel like if you're in another division, like a normal division, it would be the Angels,
right?
That was your biggest threat. And you got three here. Who do you think's a tougher out, Texas or Houston? Just matchup-wise.
I mean, I think right now, just the way that Houston's playing, now I realize Texas is ahead of them. Yeah. But if you talk about a playoff series, there's just way too much know-how on the Houston side. I was making this point earlier today. How many other teams in baseball have two lefty bats in the same lineup like Alvarez and Tucker? And I just don't know that there's anyone, really, that's going it this way. And you think about the way October games get decided. You rarely have the ability to string together three hits in a row. You're living and winning with the long ball. And Houston has a long ball kind of a lineup. Texas does, too. I think what we're seeing that they won a game last night a very similar way with the way Seager, Lowe, you could maybe put Texas in the same conversation. But with Houston, they're the best at this time of year until someone proves otherwise for me. Maybe you say Atlanta on the other side of the National League bracket, but it's a tough division. And to your point, Shannon's exactly right. This is a very, very difficult division to be in at the moment. And I think the larger point I would make is to those who said that the expanded playoffs would water things down and make it less competitive. In fact, it's quite the opposite, because you're going to have a really good team. No matter which team it is in the American League that misses it, you're going to have a really good team at staying home. It's winning in the upper 80s, which in any year, in any format, at least since the wild card has come around, if you're winning 88 ball games, 87, 88, 89, you're a good team. You're worthy of the playoffs. We've seen a World Series champion, the St. Louis Cardinals, back in 06, 83-win team. So the Mariners, I think, are very worthy of the playoffs. Unfortunately, though, a lot of other teams are as well.
What you've seen over these past four games, and maybe just the month of September, they're 8-15 in this month. They've beaten two winning teams. They've beaten the Rays once and the Reds once. It has not been a good month. Is this a team that's, you look at and go, kind of running out of gas, fatigue is setting in, maybe they're just not as deep as other teams? You look at the lineup, Mariner lineup, you look at the Rangers and the Dodgers, who they played recently, you're going, all right, this doesn't seem equal.
Right.
There's damage 1-9 in those lineups. There just isn't here.
Correct. I think there's a few elements here. I think number one, first and foremost, you're asking some young arms to pitch major games at a time of year when they really haven't had to pitch before. And that, to me, stands out, whether it's Miller, whether it's Wu, And this is where, and I was, someone mentioned this to me today, you think about the big picture, how different would this be in terms of the workload on the staff if you had either Marco or Robbie Ray?
Yeah.
You've got a former Cy Young winner who basically pitched an inning and was done.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to think about the impact of that. And the chances of any organization outrunning losing two guys, one of whom is a former Cy Young winner, in any given year, and that's really almost miraculous that you would get to the playoffs after losing pitching of that caliber when you really think about that. You trade your closer away at the middle of the year. I mean, it was to fulfill a vacancy, but they've had to deal with some adversity in terms of just the way the roster is constructed. Now, I also think, you know, sometimes we tend to oversimplify sports, and we talk about the superstars. The reality is when Julio hits like he did in August, this team looks unbeatable. And when he's been a little more ordinary in the month of September, they're beatable. And that's – he makes them go. When traffic is on the bases, for a team that admittedly has not exactly excelled in situational hitting this season, I think that's another weakness where you get late in the year, you got to find a way to win a game like Saturday's game in Texas, like one of the games against the Dodgers, lower scoring games, the one against LA that went into extra innings. You're a base hit away, a base hit. And – really, that was the story of the last time we did a show together, the 18-inning game last October. They were a base hit away. And I think that's the same story now. Where is that lost base hit? If you have a couple games this year where you get one more hit, if you get a hit against Texas in that low-scoring game, you get a hit against the Dodgers, it's a very different feel tonight.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about, because last year we were like, oh, man, they didn't have any injuries with their starting rotation.
Right.
And this year, it doesn't really feel like it, which is just a testament to how well they've done developing pitching. I mean, I think it gets lost just because we sort of lament the lack of offense and the hitters. What's the kid's name down in Texas that they just brought up?
Evan Carter.
Evan Carter
batting ninth and hit, and he's got an OPS of 1,000.
Yeah, he's killing it. I mean, but I feel like that's like a bigger impact, or at least that's a bigger desire here in Seattle than pitching. But the pitching and the way they've developed it, you're right. I mean, you look at it and go, yeah, you lost a couple of, you know, Marco and Robbie Ray. I mean, that's pretty significant. There's not lots of
right
teams that are in contention that have had those kinds
right
of injuries.
Exactly, and I think that to that extent, when you look at the fullness of time in this season, what it means, if you look at how many young guys have now gotten their opportunities, that's going to be a great platform, however this year ends, for next season. Now, the one thing that I would say about when you look year over year, the sustainability of success and how hard it is to repeat, you know, one part of this team that they've had to rely on a ton is the bullpen. And you're proud, I think, as an organization when you've got someone who's having a year as great as what Brash is having, but then you're almost nervous when you see, oh, he's leading the majors in appearances because he's already appeared in 75 games. That's a lot of games.
Yeah.
And you look at Topa's up there too, among the top five in the American League. That's a good thing. They're durable, but when you check the record, how many relievers are able to appear in 70 plus games a year and be great year after year after year after year? It is really hard to do. And I think the same thing is probably even true for the starters. What are the odds that the Millers and the Woos and Gilbert, Kirby, that they're all able to take that step, remain healthy collectively as a group? This is a team that, as great as they've done internally with this group, you probably have to layer in some more pitching next year because it's really hard to count on this level of internal success from your young guys year after year.
As far as what we've seen with it, and we'll see whether they make it or not this year.
Right.
Do you feel like their approach in the offseason needs to be kind of a left turn from what they did this past offseason? Because, I mean, the reality is you've got one guy, offensively speaking, that's still on the roster that you picked up in the offseason. The other three are gone. Cooper
right.
Hummel went down to the minors. So four are not here.
Right, right.
You can't do that.
Yes.
You can't have that. And you've got questions about, you know, I don't know what Ty France is.
Right.
You stick with him. Do you move on? You still don't really have a second baseman. You still don't really have a left fielder. So if you're in charge, do you say, all right, we need to reimagine the offseason. Let's forget about what we did in this last one. here's how we're going now.
Yes, I think you do. And I would say that one name that stands out and that would really change the look of this team is Bellinger. If he's, you know, he's going to be a free agent. And when you think about what that big-time lefty bat would mean in the middle of the lineup to give more balance and just some support for Julio, where he – now, of course, he's played a lot of center field, so where do you play him? I guess naturally you'd probably play him at first base. But that's where I think first base becomes a position on the field where, as much as Ty France has been an amazing player for this organization, it's easier to find a first baseman than it is a lot of other guys. You look around, you know, J.P. Crawford is your shortstop. I mean, there's, to me, zero question about that. You probably look at Suarez for one more year at third base, I would say, given what he's done for you. I think the power there, you've got a really good catcher situation there with Cal behind the plate. But I do think a corner bat that's left-handed, that is a legit all-star level run producer, and also one that you would hope to put the ball in play a lot. I mean, that to me, and again, I'm describing someone that's, you know, a free agent, lefty bat with power who doesn't strike out a lot. I mean, that's
super cheap.
Yeah, right. That is expensive. You're talking about a luxury signing. But again, and this is where the Mariners under the hood will take a look at these decisions. If you're pretty comfortable in the ability of your internal pitching group to be good and inexpensive, then you don't need to worry as much about signing the next Robbie Ray on the pitching side. Let's maybe supplement your pitching with some lower cost expenditures and really go all in trying to find the bat. And now is it Ohtani? Who knows if you can really go and allocate a bunch of your offseason bandwidth to trying to go after Shohei. But there are other bats there that I think fit exactly what this team needs. And Bellinger's one. He grew up in Arizona, so he's a West Coast guy. I could see that being maybe something that helps the Mariners' cause a little bit. But it's going to be a really interesting case to look at this winter. Who is the big time lefty bat they find a way to bring in the middle of the lineup?
You don't think the Cubs try to keep him?
Well,
there?
They certainly will. Mm-hmm. But given that his agent is Scott Boras, and given that he's made it this far without getting signed, I'm sure, or I shouldn't say sure, I'm confident he will go to the market and see what kind of offers he could find.
He's one of the guys that I was wanting last year. I didn't think he'd get $17 million coming off of the year that he'd had.
Right,
so
right.
I understood why they didn't do that, but it was him, J.D. Martinez, and Brandon Drury. Those are the three guys I wanted them
exactly.
to go after.
And Martinez has had a good year with the Dodgers.
Really good.
He's the reigning player of the week now. So, and that's where, again, when you pitch as well as this team has pitched, you start to dream on getting that one more bat. And wouldn't it make a big impact today if he's in there? And again, the veteran is maybe that guy that last night has a little different approach against Verlander. I mean, Verlander just owned the moment, was totally comfortable, never seemed like he was in a panic or in a moment of uncertainty. And again, when you're 40 years old and you've been doing it for 20 years, basically, that's why he's special. That's why he's going to go to Cooperstown. But that's the kind of a game where that to your point, Bob, the lack of lineup depth, where you've got Evan Carter batting ninth for Texas, where Arcia is batting in the lower third of the lineup for Atlanta. I mean, those are World Series type lineups. And I think what we don't know yet is this a World Series type lineup? And the way that this month has gone, it's made you question that.
You mentioned Cal Raleigh, and first of all, I've been watching the morning show, and his mom is okay with Big Dumper.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
So I wanted to clear that up because
it's been talked a lot. I'm going to make sure that I send back word to my colleague Robert Flores that he's aware of that, that his mom approves of Big Dumper. Well, what a great family the Raleighs are.
Oh, man. Well, he's got a great baseball name.
He does.
And recently we were talking earlier about, first of all, how tough he is because he gets banged up all the time, but he's been thrown out base runners at a really high rate, and you know, switch hitters, got 30 home runs. Seems like, I don't know, he's not a very vocal guy, but it seems like he's sort of the heartbeat of this team. Does that come off that way?
I think so. And I did note Tim Hevely's great game notes today, the mention about his Silver Slugger candidacy there as a catcher. Mm-hmm. That's a difficult award to win. When you have won the Silver Slugger as a catcher, meaning that you have been behind the plate often enough to qualify as a catcher, and you're hitting like this, from the left side, obviously, switch hitting catcher. That is a special, special achievement. And I agree. I think that's he's the kind of player that you build around. Notice in the whole scope of what the Mariners could do this offseason, at no point do we say, well, maybe they have to take a different look to the catching position. No, they've got their guy. I mean, he is the Jason Varitek of this team. I mean, that's as high a praise as you can give to someone. And obviously, he grew up idolizing Tech right. because of his family's New England connections. And, of course, Jason originally drafted by the Mariners all those years ago. But I think that he – Varitek was the heartbeat and the backbone of that team. And that is exactly, to me, what Cal Raleigh is going to be here. And he should be playing in October a bunch over his career. He should be doing it all in this uniform. And I say this, too, because when talent is young and there is so much possibility in front of you, the baseball mind almost tricks us into thinking that it's all sustainable forever. But let's remember, Gilbert's going to get expensive and Kirby's going to get expensive. And Raleigh, switch-hitting catcher who hits like this, he's going to get expensive. This roster, which seems like this great cohesive group, and it is, the economics of the game will very soon descend upon this group, and they'll have to make some tough choices. But among the tough choices, the easy choice is that guy belongs behind the plate here for as long as you can possibly make it work.
Hey, what? And this is speculation. There's no way to know this, but how different do you think the position is of this team if Kelnick never gets hurt? He got hurt. He had a seven-game.
Great question.
Mark that down, Matt. We got a seven-game hitting streak going.
Yep.
He got hurt.
Right.
We saw him lighten it up at the beginning of the season, hit a dip, and he was starting to come out of it again right before he got hurt. Again, I don't know if he makes a huge difference or not, but what do you think, just based on what you've seen from him?
I think just based on, again, the analytics would tell you, and this is probably where the eye test and the analytics would be in agreement. You think about what his wins above replacement was and that chunk of time that he missed. Let's say, again, like a win there is not necessarily a win in the standings, but his cumulative value, you would say, especially when he was starting to get going again, was significant. I think this team is a game or two better if he had been in the lineup the whole time. And you think about the number of games where they were missing one base hit. And he's a guy, when you look at the left-right balance of this team, he's so important. Raleigh is important. Kelnick is crucial. And especially when you look at the way the lineup can be lengthened out, different spots that he's hidden during the course of the year, when he's been batting fifth, sixth, I mean, there's so many RBI chances that come up around that spot in the lineup. I do think if he's healthy all year long, this team is comfortably in the playoffs.
Yeah, Kelnick, it's interesting with him how everybody has flip-flopped back and forth about it. At first it was like, oh, we can't wait to have him. Then, oh, he's cocky. And then, you know, at some point there was kind of a feeling that the Mariners weren't taking things seriously enough. People need to be more like Kelnick. When they were telling him he should have been more like Julio before, it's interesting, and I think just his personality and everything, that's probably mostly with fans what brings that
right.
on, right?
Right?
Not his numbers, not looking at that. They're looking at, you know, what kind of guy is he, and it seems to be important to people. And, it's very interesting, I think, that he has been kind of a lightning rod.
Right. No, I think that's a good point, David. And two, the, you know, clubhouses, and again, I'm not in the Mariner clubhouse every day to be able to render a full opinion on exactly what the internal dynamics are, other than to say, when you're around a good clubhouse and you've played pro sports and been around them, you understand that there's a difference of personality that sort of makes the symphony go. You can't, like, the symphony isn't all trumpets, right? You have to have some different instruments with different styles to make it all sound good.
Right.
And there's, you know, as cool and calm and collected as Derek Jeter always was, Paul O'Neill would do exactly what Kelnick did. Okay, like that, like Kelnick, the way that Kelnick got hurt was straight out of the Paul O'Neill school of how you handle failure.
Yeah.
Okay, and oh, Paul O'Neill's named the warrior. Look how much he cares. And it's, and again, it's amazing how winning changes everything. And when you win, oh, it's the intensity works. And then if you lose, well, this guy, is he trying to do this for show? What is it? But I think Jared Kelnick cares in a very deep way about the game. He, when you think about his whole story and the notion of basically his family having this self-made player where he didn't play high school baseball, was on his own in the snow in Wisconsin, grinding away. And so when you look at it that way, that when he made Team USA as like a 17-year-old, he's on there, and it's you go down the list of the hometowns. It's like Huntington Beach, you know, Mobile, Alabama, Lake Worth, Florida, and then Waukesha, Wisconsin. Okay, like he got there by grinding. And yeah. So I've always sort of chuckled when players get this far in any sport, and then they get to the big leagues. Wait a minute, we're gonna have to have you change what you do. It's like, wait a minute, I got here being myself, and we heard Coach Prime himself said hitting the baseball is the hardest thing you can do in sports. Yeah. Okay, so now we're gonna ask you to do the hardest thing you can do in sports, but be someone who's not you. So I think the best managers I've been around, and Dusty's one of them, have always let his players be themselves. And I think Scott's the same way. I mean, I've not seen Scott try to change somebody's personality. So I think a lot of it's fun conversation for fans. But I think at the end of the day, this job is so hard. And I have so much respect for the players that certainly as a media member, I am the last person that could ever say, well, you got to change your personality. Heck no. Be yourself. Play. Yeah. And because if you're not that, at least from what I've seen in this game, covering it for darn near two decades, if you can't be yourself, you got no chance anyway. So be yourself, be the best version of yourself. And so I don't think Jared Kelenic should dial it down. Now, do I wish he wasn't hurt? Of course. But I think to ask him to essentially change his character is honestly not that productive.
You bring up service, and as you might imagine, when things aren't going well, the fans will immediately look for who's to blame, and more often than not, it's Scott Service, and he doesn't know baseball, and he doesn't know what he's doing, and why did he do this instead of that, and you know how it goes. It's
right.
It's him, it's DePoto, everybody's dumb. But just give me your sense of a guy who's been a finalist for Manager of the Year
right.
the past two seasons, and how he's done this year. I don't think... I understand the outrage. I understand being invested as a fan and passionate when things don't go right and a guy makes a switch and it doesn't work, or he's not playing somebody you think should be playing and it doesn't work. I get it. But being objective and rational about it, how do you think Scott's done this year?
Scott Service has had a good year as the manager of the Seattle Mariners. Now, it's hard to say that he's had a great year if they don't make the playoffs, but I think he's had a good year. And I circle back to a point that we made earlier in the conversation. He's lost Ray and Marco. His closer was traded at midseason to help supplement what was, an obvious need for position players. They were basically teetering on the brink of being sellers at the end of July. They have one of the best Augusts in the history of the franchise. So I have a hard time saying that he didn't have them focused. I mean, to me, if your manager has lost the room, or if your manager has done poorly, August would not have happened. There's no way you play that well for that long if the manager doesn't have a good feel of the pulse of the group. It's not possible. It's too hard to do that in baseball. So I think he's had a good year. He's been able to bring along these young pitchers, and I think he's done a very good job of it. I would also say this. You look at the bullpen and the number of new faces back there. Topa's had an amazing year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And again, pitching coach, bullpen coach, they all have something to do with it, but when you have Brash and Topa having the kind of years they have had, Munoz in his first year as a full-time closer, Saucedo's come out and had a really good year, Campbell, Spire. I mean, this is not a bullpen of household names that Seattle fans would have known 16 months ago. And look at how successful they've been in the fullness of time. I think he's done a really good job. I also think this team, at some point, you know, as a situational hitting group, and that's not really the manager's purview. This is, by the way, an issue for a lot of teams around baseball. It's gotten, you know, the teams that stand out and do well in that area, the Dodgers, the Braves, they're the exceptions. A lot of teams in the game strike out too much. The Mariners happen to be one of them. And I think, so for me, I would focus more attention if I was going to be a fan who would look at different things. How can we get better? It's more under the hood hitting philosophy things than game management strategy. For me, that's what I see. And by the way, I'm optimistic because on the field today you had Edgar on the cage and Ichiro shagging. So there's a lot of really good Mariner offensive vibe.
Good mojo.
Going around the ballpark today.
Yep.
Good mojo going on.
We need good mojo. Well, and that's, you know, I'm feeling good about this game. This is a good team that is not going to keep struggling like this. There are a couple good base hits away, but I'll say this. I mean, I think that Javier's a guy they've seen a lot. He's not quite as explosive as he was a year ago. If you just look at this game in isolation and not worry so much about what happened the last 4 days, this is a game the Mariners should win, and I believe they will win.
Now, you know the texters are going to go nuts if they lose. They're going to go, tell Morosi, blah, blah, blah.
Morosi's fault. And I will gladly take responsibility for that if things don't go well. But I'll tell you, one thing I love, by the way, is the Mariners took a full infield today, and the Astros appear to be doing the same thing right now. I love infield. I say one of the coolest things I've seen in my life covering baseball was when, about an hour before the first pitch of the WBSC Premier 12 championship game, gold medal game in 2019, at the Tokyo Dome, Team Japan, full infield at about 6 p.m. In front of like 40,000 fans. That was like watching the ballet. It was so cool. So that I love a good infield, and both teams today, well done. I've seen two good infields.
It sounds like morning skate as well.
Yeah.
Just like the morning skate.
The weird little things that...
the nuances. You love it.
That get Morosi fired up.
Love the passion. I absolutely love it. Awesome to have you in person.
Likewise. Great seeing you guys. Hopefully many more conversations in person this year. Let's hope so.
Thank you for... I hope people feel better out there. You feel more optimistic. We'll see. I'm sure the text will light up here and let me know whether I'm right or wrong. Meanwhile, we're going to keep the great guests rolling. El Hombre, Michael Bradley, will join us next year with Wyman and Bob. You are listening to Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.